Guys, grow up. Your grandparents were 20 years old in the 60s. Your grandmom and granddad have been to one orgy minimum. They didn't call it that. They called it like Tambola night or some shit like that, right?
On this episode of The Commercial Break.
You said you're 5'8.5", but did you know that IMDb claims you're 5'4.25"? Are you or are you not, Veer Das, using Ron DeSantis' cobbler, his shoemaker?
No, I'm 5'8.5" as measured. Fuck you, IMDb.
Seriously, right?
Yeah.
The next episode of The Commercial Break starts now.
Welcome back to The Commercial Break. I'm Brian Green, and this is the director of Mumbai Salsa, Chrissy Joy. Only best to you, Chrissy.
Best to you, Brian.
Best to you out there in the podcast universe. Mumbai Salsa.
Mumbai Salsa.
Known all around the world. Or by us. Mumbai Salsa is a semi-famous Bollywood movie.
Yes.
Starring our guest today here on The Commercial Break.
We have a guest.
And you know if we have a guest, it's a special occasion because we haven't had a guest in 212 episodes of The Commercial Break.
What was the last guest?
The last guest, I think, was Jeff.
Jeff, my husband?
Your husband. No, which other Jeff? Oh, no, Jeff Dwoskin was on, too, I think, at one point. Actually, I think Jeff Dwoskin was the last guest. Sorry, Jeff. We decided to call it a day after that. We had a few guests. We had Wally Green and some other people.
We did.
I interviewed Dane Cook. We did a couple of things.
It was in the early days, and it just didn't turn out right. So it hasn't felt right until now.
We decided long ago, that let's get it right inside the room before we take it outside
exactly.
the room. And it only took us 212 episodes. To get back then. I actually think it's more like 312.
Yeah,
somebody counted. It's like 212, 312.
Okay.
Somebody took the time to count. Our intrepid researchers out there in the commercial break. But we do have a guest today. It's Veer Das. He's a very famous comedian here in India, here in the United States, all around the world.
Four
Netflix special.
I mean,
not many people do that.
No, not many
people do that. And so that in and of itself is an accomplishment, but there's a lot of other accomplishments to go along with that.
Does that mean that we're just 1 degree away from a Netflix special?
I think Netflix has been knocking on the door, mainly to get their $6.99 since my check bounced. I signed up for yet another free trial so I can watch Veer's latest special.
You just keep creating new Gmail addresses.
Why not? Chris, you don't know how many Gmail addresses I have for certain reasons or another. When you're doing as much weird research on the internet as I am, you got to create fake email addresses.
Well, speaking of, I just read today that they're getting ready to do a big purge.
Well, they did.
Of inactive Gmail.
Oh, of inactive Gmail
accounts.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit. I got to go look and see if any of those are important.
Reactivate some.
Yeah. Wackadoo 3@gmail3000.
Why Brian
3000. Veer is going to be our guest later on in the show. He is a noted comedian. He's got his fourth stand-up special. Again, that's an amazing accomplishment that not many, I think, well-known.
No.
American, like, you know, you think of stand-up comedy and you think of all the people who have done Netflix specials. Veer has done four of them, which is a great accomplishment. The newest one is called Landing.
Yep.
I watched it for the second time last night. It's just so fucking funny. He's just so fucking funny.
It's really funny.
He's subversive. And he's satirical.
Yeah, he wraps a lot of his comedy inside of a fantastic message.
Yeah. Well, that's like, just like The Commercial Break, he is highly successful, extremely popular, and he wraps his comedy in this subversive...
And I just had to say, just like The Commercial Break, he's been on Conan before.
Yes.
So have we.
We paid a lot of money. to be on Conan. He's been on Conan a couple times.
Yeah.
I think I read somewhere. But yeah, we had to pay for the privilege. Veer just got invited on.
Right.
Veer just has a good agent. We have a good agent too. Don't get me wrong. But,
what's up, Matt?
Yeah. What's up, Matt? How you doing? Where's that Conan special? Where's that Netflix special, bro? Can you imagine if The Commercial Break had a Netflix special?
No.
It would be like the least watched special in Netflix history. You know how anybody can put something on Amazon?
Yeah.
Yes. So I get this message the other day. Listen to this.
Well, I'm thinking of like the suggested shows you should watch next. We would be the not suggested. Suggested, do not watch.
Not recommended for viewers like you.
If you like this,
what if it just
you definitely if you like will this, not
you'll
like
definitely not like that. Unless Veer is on.
Right.
Maybe the Netflix special should be Veer telling his jokes on the commercial break. I get this phone call. You know, the word is out. We've been preparing for this for a couple months. Word is out. And we've been preparing to bring guests back to the show for a couple months. And so word is out. And I get this like side message from someone who knows that we're looking or that we're now booking the end of season 4 and season 5. And I get this message. And the name that they say is a famous name. You would know it. You would know the comedian. Everybody, I think, in the United States would know the comedian.
Okay.
And I'm like, wow. And then the next message is, yeah, his brother produced a movie about another guy that you wouldn't know. And that guy wants to be on the show. And I'm like, oh, that's what you think of the commercial break? Yeah. And the response was, well, you got to start somewhere, bro. I'm like, we did start somewhere. We had Jeff Dwoskin on the show. I mean, come on, let's go. No knock on Jeff. But at the end of the day, like, you know, I think he was A for effort to my friend. But at
well,
the end
that's
of the
a little
day,
bit of a clickbait.
Yeah, that was kind of clickbaity. It's kind of shitty. It's like getting catfished.
Want to interview this guy? Well, yeah.
Well,
first start here.
Want to interview this guy? I bet you do. Prove it. Prove it. Yes, so we're having Veer on. I've been headlong in Veer world. We all have headlong in Veer world for the last week. And
it's been so fun.
It's been a lot of fun. But I think more than fun, Veer did something that I think kind of propelled his profile. Especially during the pandemic when we were all kind of locked down and fighting against this and protesting against that. And Veer just had some really on-point messaging about his homeland, which is India. He had some very poignant messaging. He put together this YouTube video, which I'm sure a lot of our listeners have already seen because it's been viewed by millions and millions and millions of people. It's called I Come From Two Indias. And you want to hear? Actually, I have it. Do you want to hear a little bit
I
of it?
I would love
okay,
to.
Okay, here. I'm going to put it up on... I'll put it up on YouTube, too, just so everyone can see it if they'd like to see it. I'm also going to put a link to it. I would actually probably prefer that you go to the link than go to our show, because then you'll actually have to watch our show. So there you go. All right, let's take a listen to it, and I'll stop and pause, and we can discuss.
Okay.
I wanted to try something since you're all... this is a moment for me, so...
I think I should preface this by saying this is a sold-out audience at the Kennedy fucking center, at the Kennedy mm-hmm. Center. This guy is like, he's on fire.
If I make a small video with you guys before I leave, would that be all right, yeah? We are at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. We are sold out. Did you have a good time tonight, guys?
Look at that. Is that not a dream fucking come true?
Oh
my I mean, can
God.
You imagine playing a place like that? It's just like, no. It gives me chills when I watch this video. Now I've seen it like 10 times. Every time it gives me chills. This audience is huge. And you know it was done during the pandemic. Why? Everyone is wearing a mask.
The temptation in this moment is to make a video about myself. And I don't want to do that because I'm reminded that I come from India. I come... From which India? I come from two Indias. Those are the Indias that I bring on stage with me right now. I come from an India where children in masks hold hands with each other, and yet I come from an India where leaders hug each other without masks. I come from an India where the AQI is 9,000, but we still sleep on the roof and look up at the stars. I come from an India where we worship women during the day and gang rape them at night. I come from an India where we claim to be divided over Bollywood on Twitter and yet are united by Bollywood in the darkness of a theater.
Mm.
I come from an India where we scoff at sexuality and yet fuck till we reach a billion people.
I want to stop right there. This is like right on the nose, right? And I'm not from India, so I don't know every eccentricity and every detail about India. But when he talks about, I think AQI is kind of like the domestic national product, like how much average someone makes. I think, I don't really know. But then he talks about, you know, worshiping women during the day and the gang raping them at night. It's just so poignant. It's so hard hitting.
I come from an India where journalism is supposedly dead because men in fancy suits and studios give each other hand jobs, and yet women on the road with laptops are still telling the truth.
I come from.
Let me stop right now and say yeah. that AQI is actually air quality. Okay, now I get that the whole thing. That makes more sense. Yes. Yeah, I was wondering why you were talking about sleep.
Or gross national product.
Hard-hitting facts here at the commercial break. You heard it here last.
It means air quality.
Fact news or fiction.
Yep.
In India, where we bleed blue every time we play green, but every time we lose to green, we turn orange all of a sudden. I come from an India where we laugh so loudly in the comfort of our own homes that you can hear us through the walls, and yet I come from an India where we break down the walls of a comedy club because you can hear laughter inside.
Mm.
I come from an India where old leaders will not stop talking about their dead fathers and young leaders will not stop following their living mothers. I come from an India that has the largest working population under 30 on the planet, but still listens to 75-year-old leaders with 150-year-old ideas.
Wow.
Mm. I come from an India where every time we get information, we are always available to care for the PM, but we can't seem to get any information on PM cares. I come from an India where we kicked out the British, but yet we call the government the ruling party. I come from an India where women wear saris and sneakers and yet have to take advice from old men who have never worn a sari and will never get to take one off in their entire lives. I come. I come from an India where our music is bahut hard, but our sentiments are bahut soft. I come from an India where people sleep outside on the road outside the club, but man, 20 times a year, the road is the club. I come from an India where we take pride in being vegetarians and yet run over the farmers who grow our vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
This is a real statement.
Yeah, this is a real statement, mm-hmm. and then I'll share some more information about this when he finishes.
I come from an India where we claim to fully support the troops until it comes to their pension plans. I come to an India where we can never be on time, no matter where we go. But yet, we are always early on the Cowin website for some reason. I come from an India where we have maids and drivers and yet want to come to America to do their job. I come from an India that self-serves, and I come from an India that self-preserves. I come from an India that will not shut up, and yet I come from an India that will not speak up. I come from an India that will accuse me of airing our dirty laundry, and yet I come from an India that wears their heart on their sleeve, irrespective of how dirty their clothes are. I come from an India that tells me every single day to go to Pakistan, and yet I also come from an India that invites Pakistanis over every single day, if only to whoop their ass on a cricket field. I come from an India that is going to watch this and say, this isn't stand-up comedy. Where is the goddamn joke? And yet I come from an India that will watch this and know that there is a gigantic joke. It just isn't funny.
Yeah, true. Wow.
He didn't know how true that would become.
Mm-hmm.
I come from an India where children living in basements and writing on comment sections have more courage than men in skyscrapers. I come from an India that is Hindu and Muslim and Christian and Sikh and Parsi and Jew. And when we all look up at the sky, we only see one thing together, the price of petrol. I leave you tonight and I go back to that India. Which India do I go back to? Both of them. Which India am I proud of? One of them. Which India is proud of me? None of them. I wanted to do this because we're at the Kennedy Center. You know, this is a dream for an artist. It's been mine for a very long time. And the reason it's a dream is because you get to see great people here. You get to see greatness on this stage. And this whole room was built for a great man in his memory. But as I stand here before you, I'm reminded that I represent a great people. Great people who built a great thing that is turning into a memory.
Mm.
And I know that you believe in that India like I believe in that India, because I see it in your eyes and you are in this room tonight. So before I leave your country, I will leave this stage and I will put the camera on you, and you make some noise for the India you want to live in, because I promise you that this is the Kennedy Center, but tonight this is our fucking house. So make some noise for India.
What a fucking, I mean, just so poignant. It's like, you know.
I know, it gives me chills.
It gives me chills too.
Yeah, that he was so bold as to come out and do that and just take a fucking chance.
Take a fucking chance. And so, you know, so.
To show who he is and what his thoughts are.
So the backlash with Veer in his home country is amazing. People were calling for his arrest. They opened up investigations. You know, he tells them in his newest Netflix special, which is called Landing, he shares that he was in a real moment of despair, a real moment of depression, because he felt like he let down an entire country. Because while some of the reaction was mostly positive about this, there was that negativity that always shines through.
And like they shine, it's not negativity. And the listeners can listen to our full interview coming up next. But one of the things I thought was true was that every nation apparently has a crazy news channel that decides to cherry pick.
We have seven.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Even the things that are out of context.
Yeah, that's what they do. They you know, they destroy you.
And it causes a huge uproar.
Paper cut by paper cut, and they take it out of context. And by the way, every news organization is guilty of that. Like,
true.
Taking what they want to and putting it all over the papers. But the guy's got just such an amazing story. He, you know, grew up in India, and then he went to school in Africa, and then he comes to Chicago for college. And I look forward to asking him about a number of these things. You know, like we talked about, he went on Conan. He reached...
The lowest of lows.
I mean, he was there on Conan.
When you have to start somewhere.
You do have to start somewhere.
He started with Conan.
Let's be honest. About 3 years ago, they knocked on our door and they said, hey, can Veer get on the commercial break? And I said, let's see what he does next. Let's see what he does next, and then we'll talk about it. Yeah, and then he did Conan, and I was like, well,
maybe.
That's kind of the bottom.
It's going in the maybe pile.
It's going in the maybe pile. That's really good comedy. We are at the top of the mediocre comedy pile. I'm not sure how I judge that. Commercial break.
Oh, my God.
So, you know what? I think we should just bring Veer on and have a conversation with him. You can check out his Netflix special, Landing, is available now. He's got three other ones on Netflix. You can just go and type in Veer Das on the search function.
The first one was really cool, too. They were able to do half of it in India and half of it in New York.
And they catch the reactions. They catch the reactions from two different audiences. I thought that was a very interesting angle, a very interesting take. He's got a YouTube channel, Veer Das.in. He is the middle of a world tour. What is he on? Every continent except for Antarctica. He's visiting at least one country. He's here in the United States through January and February. He's coming to an Atlanta.
We're going to go check him out in Atlanta.
I'm so excited about this. So all things Veer Das available at veerdas.in. And please check out his Netflix special. I say all this because I don't want to bother anybody with that promotional bullshit during the actual interview. But please do us a favor. We'll also put all of these links inside of the show notes so you have an opportunity to listen to the interview, and then you can go there afterwards and you can check it all out. All right, let's take our first break in the show, and when we come back, we're going to dive right in with Mr. Veer.
Let's go.
Das.
Yeah, Brian, we get it. But back to me. I mean, this TCB promo. Leave us a voicemail at 626-ASK-TCB3, and you might just hear yourself on the show. Want to text us instead? Lucky for you, we also have a number just for that. Text us at 855-TCB-8383 and give us compliments. You can also always go to tcbpodcast.com for all of our audio and video. Find us on Instagram at The Commercial Break and on TikTok at tcbpodcast. And find us on youtube.com/thecommercialbreak for fully edited episodes. Now that that's done, let's listen to a few sponsors and get back to this episode of The Commercial Break.
This episode is sponsored in part by Regain, couples therapy by BetterHelp. If you've listened to 5 episodes of The Commercial Break, then you probably understand that Chrissy and I are big proponents of therapy. We both go, we've both gone, we've done it for a long time. I personally foresee myself doing therapy well into the future. It's great to have someone independent of me to share my thoughts with and just relieve some stress and get some guidance. But what do you do when you're experiencing problems in your relationship, stress around your relationship, or maybe you just need a third party to talk to and share your feelings with? Couples therapy is the greatest gift someone gave me via advice.
and couples therapy is a gift you can give your relationship, because even the best of relationships have moments when a therapist can help. And that's why Chrissy and I are really happy that Regain Couples Therapy by BetterHelp is available in the comfort of your own home or wherever you choose to do it. It's online therapy, online couples therapy. You can choose the time, the place, and you can choose the therapist. You can actually switch your therapist at no cost to you if you find you're not jiving with a therapist, or maybe you just want to change. I love this idea. I'm a big fan of couples therapy, and BetterHelp is a brand that everybody knows has been doing wonderful things in the therapy space. Listen, I've said it before on behalf of Regain, and I'll say it again. Go to couples therapy is simply one of the best pieces of advice I've ever received regarding relationships. And because the best relationships are always worth fighting for, try something new in therapy. Visit regain.com/BTY for 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/BTY. There's nothing to be embarrassed about, nothing to be ashamed of. Visit regain.com/BTY and work toward a better relationship. Regain.com/BTY, as in best to you. And I want to thank Regain Couples Therapy by BetterHelp for being a sponsor of The Commercial Break. All right, and we welcome our guest, Veer Das. Veer, how are you, my friend?
Welcome.
I'm good. It's good to see you.
It is good to see you. Where in the world is Veer Das right now? You're in between, like, what, Ohio and Albany or something like that?
I'm in between these two pillows is where I spend most of my night. And American pillows are way too thick. I don't know why you need each pillow to be like a Japanese pancake for some reason. I can't sleep just because I have neck issues.
Oh, no.
Like one American pillow is equivalent to four Indian pillows. I'm in a hotel in New York City right now.
Okay, so you're getting ready for the next show. We all look at our phones too much, so our necks are all fucked up. So what we do is we just put big pillows to readjust in the middle of the night. We're hoping that we can get our necks back straight from all this like this. And everywhere you go, you just see people buried in their phone with neck problems. So,
well, I mean, you guys kind of need to be buried in your phones right now. You have a lot going on.
True. Very true.
You know, so, yeah.
It's a little scary.
So Veer, during the pandemic, I watched your I Come From Two Indias. I'm going to get right into it here.
Yeah, sure.
What a poignant and powerful video you put together. And the focus, for those who haven't seen it, we'll put a link on the show notes in case you want to watch it. The focus is kind of the dichotomy of the country you call home. And what a powerful speech. It like gives you chills when you watch it. Did you, first of all, as a guy from India, do you understand, like for me, the Kennedy Center is where we celebrate our most honored artists and musicians and comedians. Is it just like a most powerful moment to be standing in front of a crowd at the Kennedy Center sold out?
Well, it's definitely a blessing. You know, I think you have to get to a point where you can work the Kennedy Center, right? So in that sense, yes, definitely. It means as much as I'm doing Carnegie Hall in January. So, you know, it means as much as that.
Sure.
Or it means as much as the Apollo in London, for instance, or Royal Albert Hall or the Sydney Opera House. But on the flip side, you've also booked the Kennedy Center.
Sure.
You know, there is ticketing to it as well. And you have put money down to be there that evening, you know.
You didn't get invited by any of the Kennedys to go do that show. It's just you have to actually put your credit card down for that one.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, you pay a venue rental and then you take ticket money home. And that's how that stuff works. But it was, like I said, it wasn't by virtue of the venue. It was a YouTube video, you know, and so the venue is really just YouTube in that sense. But
I think that it's, to me, the kind of Archimedes sword of this whole situation with I Come From Two Indias is how beautiful a moment, how powerful a moment, and then what a kind of nightmare it threw you into for a little while there. And you know, I understand you may not be able to go into extreme detail. You don't want to start this all over again, right?
Exactly.
But at the same time, can you share a little bit about that video when it came out? What were some of the reactions and repercussions?
Well, I got to be honest with you, the reactions were largely positive. You know, it was one of many YouTube videos that I've done in that vein on my channel. And I think
the hallmark of being a superpower, which I think my country is now, they have a seat at the big table, is that you're able to talk about your flaws and your beauties in the same breath, you know, much like powerful countries in the world do. And I put it up on my YouTube, and it ended up getting sort of really positive millions of views for the first 48 hours. And then I think we all have the crazy news channel.
You know, right? You guys have it too?
We talk about it all the time.
And so the if you've seen the video, it's a very patriotic video, and it's a very balanced video in terms of it talks about the light and the dark and the beauty and the ugliness in equal measure. The crazy news channel just took the dark parts, edited them together, and put it up. And that's when my life kind of exploded, right? Now, you can scream about your balance and your nuance into a void.
Doesn't matter.
That is the internet, and it won't matter. So at that point, you just kind of have to do what I did, which is shut up, buckle down, accept the feedback, kind of head down, mouth shut. And, you know, you discover what it is to be a comedian, which is if you're in a controversy or a firestorm, you get through what you need to get through. And then the first thing you say about it should be a joke. You know, you don't do the equivalent of crying on Oprah or the 19th Jada Pinkett Smith interview that none of us want to watch.
I'm sick of those too.
None of us.
So I just ended up writing a Netflix special. You know, that's I waited an entire year to talk about it. So I think that was the summary of what happened to me.
Landing is largely about the period, you know, kind of how you landed on your feet, going walking through this fire, going through your own moment, right? I don't I want to fall short of calling it cancel, because I don't think that's exactly what happened. I think you just experienced some repercussions, mostly in your homeland, right, of India, that were very negative. And so, but you came out of it, you're right, with a joke, because that's what you do, and that's who you are. And making light of the dark situations is what comics have been doing forever and ever. And you can wrap a message in that, which I think is another part of your comedy that is so, I don't know, it strikes me in a way, because we're a satirical show also. We're goofy, we're, you know, we're crazy, we're loud, we scream and yell and laugh a lot. But at the end of the day, there's some message underneath this comedy that we're doing, and it's a subversive way of getting the message. I want you to laugh, but then I want you to hear what we're saying and hear a new perspective. And you
But I also want you to know me. Like, what the hell is the point of this whole damn thing if you don't know me at the end of the day? Like, if we part ways, like if I come to Atlanta, or if we do this podcast, or if we have a special and I end up doing 500 jokes and you have a really good time, sure. But will you come back if you don't really know me, if you don't really know who I am in the world, or what my family is, or what my values are? Like, it's a very Indian thing, you know, like, we are not friends unless you've come over to my house and met my mother and sat on my bed and had tea. You know, that's friendship. If you haven't seen the ugliness, we're not friends. And I feel the same way about art. You know, if you haven't seen the ugliness, we haven't connected artists to audience. You know what I mean?
It's so...
That's a great way to say that.
So powerful. So I'm married to a Venezuelan lady, like a lady from Venezuela, not, you know, born here in the United States. And is there, is the culture... I mean, I don't know, because I, you know, I haven't sat on your bed and I haven't had tea with your mom, but...
On your bed?
Well, he said, sit on his bed. Listen, Fair and I go way back. You see those pillows back there? He's saving one for me. I'm going to bring my phone pillow and turn your world upside down.
There you go. My mom is just off camera waiting for me.
My mom would listen to this if she could figure out how to dial up a podcast. But I think that there are some similarities in the culture. And as a guy who was born in the United States in Chicago and comes from an Irish lineage, it's like we have a game we play. Who can talk the least and get out of the family function the fastest so that everyone else can then leave also? But in the Venezuelan culture, very different. And you do, people want to get to know you. They want, and that's kind of the point of life, right? Is that you sit and share and enjoy. And your comedy brings that like super personal touch. You, I felt like when I was watching Landing that I was going through it with you. And I think so the intended punchline of the whole thing, I got it. Like, I totally understood, I think, what you were going for. So you, this sensibility, like these comic sensibilities that you have, does this come from your like, what gives you the courage to go out there and do these punchlines that hit hard with laughter, but also hit hard with messaging as part of who you are? What gives you the, what's that fabric? Where does that come from? Your parents?
I mean, courage is a big word. I don't view it as courage. I just view it as being myself.
I think
you
it
know,
is.
Like, yeah. I think as you get older, like, you know, I'm in my 40s, man. You know, as you get older.
We're the same age. Yeah.
Yeah. If nothing else, who you are needs to fall onto the page in terms of your art. And it just so happens that when you cross 35, you start thinking about the world a little bit more. And you didn't before, but you're just trying to get laid in your 20s and you're trying to make money in your early 30s. Yeah. And that's all you're fucking thinking about. And then at 35, you take a breath and you're like, where am I living? And what is this place? And what are our values, etc. So it's just perhaps that phase that I'm in. Are there consequences to some of the things that I say? Sure. But do I believe that very soon around the corner will come a day when there will be no consequences for the things that I say, and they will be considered passe as they are in cultures where stand-up is a bit of an older art form? For sure. I believe that that's around the corner as well. And it is upon me and the early ones to push us in that direction, the culture of political comedy too.
That takes courage. Maybe it comes from age and experience. Maybe it comes from turning the corner and wanting something more than a piece of ass and a beer. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I mean, at least from my point of view, sitting where I'm sitting, and I don't get up in front of thousands of people every day. Yeah. I get up in front of this camera. It's really easy to do that shit. Right? Yeah, it's really easy to sit with my best friend and do this all day. But I think it takes some measure of courage, whether you think you have it or you don't. I sense that it takes courage to do that messaging. Did you have, like, when you were growing up, what was your relationship like with your parents? Are they also have these kind of sensibilities? You talk about this around the dinner table or
I think lunchtime? We're just a very open house, you know, in terms of also my parents are specifically on opposite sides of the political spectrum. Mm. You know, I come from a family where people with opposing political beliefs can live under the same roof harmoniously, you know, and I think it used to be that way in world in a really big way, you know, that you could vote differently and love each other. But I also do think that, you know, in a certain sense, stand-up comedians, when we get quote-unquote large, you know, and our careers find large audiences, we find ourselves unable to deal with a very large microscope.
Yes. Right?
But in that sense, if you've been doing movies a while, which I have, like Bollywood is really good training for stand-up backlash. Because if you think a stand-up audience can be mean, try being in a bad Bollywood movie,
really?
And you will discover what mean is. You know, so my approach to it really is: if you're going to be in the public eye, right? There's a cost, and the cost is this: there's a long line, and at the front of the line is a spotlight, and a news cycle, and controversy, and bad headlines.
Interesting.
And you will be spanked, and at some point you will hit the front of the line. And then you will join the back of the line and pray to fucking God that there are enough people in front of you so that you never
have to join the
front of the line again and you can pass through your life. So hopefully I've had two rounds actually now, and hopefully I never have another round again.
Wait, I don't know about the second round. Is this?
I was in a...
Go ahead.
I was in a Bollywood movie. It was called Masti Zade. And, you know, I was kind of at the peak of my stand-up career and until then, and was considered, you know, sort of an ambassador of quote-unquote intelligent comedy or whatever.
Okay.
And then I signed this big budget studio sex comedy, just this raunchy American Pie thing, right? And something I would never watch, entirely inauthentic, right? And just kind of blatantly sexist and many other things, but it was a large studio package. I was getting paid a fuck ton of money. And, you know, helps. I took the cash, I took the check, and
suffered
that
the
backlash
consequences.
It was pretty solid. It was like a 2-year phone stop ringing backlash.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
And so then you make your way through that too.
My brother, we have always said on this show, We have morals and scruples, yeah. and we will not cross that line unless someone chooses to pay us enough money.
Yeah, we'll be exactly. To there you go. Check.
Well, what I would yeah. like to talk about next is Mumbai salsa.
Oh.
Yeah, there you go. Right? Did you see how handsome I look in that movie?
Absolutely. We have you pictures right here.
I always thought I looked better without a jawline. You know what I mean? I just...
You know. It's a look.
It's a thing. It's a look. Some people go for it.
You've Thank been in. God for facial hair. That guy's still under here somewhere.
Me too. Yeah. You've been in 14 Bollywood movies. So this is not like, it wasn't like you, is it 14?
Yeah.
14 movies? Our intrepid researchers found out.
Yeah, it's yes. about that. Yeah, I think 13, 14, but yeah.
When you were young, you had an interesting childhood. Yeah. I was listening to you on, I think, Conan. And by the way, you... Mm-hmm. You went on Conan, you had to do what you had to do. You know, you go on Conan, yeah. you scrape a few listeners here and there. And then when we and Chrissy and I decided it was time to have you on the commercial break.
Yeah, you went from the bottom of Conan.
Straight to the top. yeah. Straight to the top of mediocre comedy podcasts right here on the commercial break. But I think you were telling the story on Conan that you had really an interesting, I mean, you shared it a number of places. I've now heard it, but you had kind of an interesting upbringing. You were born in India, but then lived in Africa for a while, right?
It's informed my comedic perspective entirely. I've just kind of been this perpetual outsider, right? Because when I was about 10 months old, I got taken to Africa after being very privileged in India. And, you know, my parents really kind of struggled in Africa. My dad was, working in a food processing company. And so I was the Indian kid in Africa. And then I got sent to this sort of preppy boarding school in India where I was the African kid in India. And then I got kicked out of that boarding school and sent to public school in Delhi where I was the preppy kid from boarding school. And then I went to college in Galesburg, Illinois, where I was the Indian kid and studied theater. And then I went back to Bollywood where I was the kid from the theater program in America in Bollywood. And now I'm working in the States where I'm the guy from Bollywood in Hollywood. Right. So it's, I've yet to fit in somewhere fully in my life, unfortunately.
Okay, you've told this story. You got to tell it here. You got kicked out of boarding school or you exited yourself from boarding school by taking a piece of you. You have to tell this
I faked appendicitis. I would not recommend this to anyone. Please do not try this at home or in any schools. But no, my friend, his appendix almost ruptured when we were on a hike with the boarding school.
One of my friends,
yeah. And I remember looking at which side of his body the appendix was. And I remember his symptoms because I was hanging out with him.
He took notes.
One day I had a Monday test and I hadn't studied for it, like a pop quiz. And I just went into the hospital in school and I was like, yeah, I think my appendix hurts. And they had just gone through this trauma where they almost lost my friend, you know, about 3 months ago. And they were like, okay, just be in the hospital and have ice cream. And then, you know, every 2-3 hours, they'd come and poke my stomach. And I'm a good actor, clearly.
Mumbai salsa is all we got to say.
And so then the next thing I know, I'm being rushed in an ambulance down to a town that's 3 hours away from my boarding school. And then I'm on an operation theater table at about 2 o'clock in the morning.
The
doctor's like, does it hurt? And I'm like, you know, fucking commit to the bit at this point. You know, and so it did. And my parents were in Africa. And I woke up and my mom, who was in Africa, was now sitting in this small town.
Oh my God.
You know, and she was just like, your appendix wasn't hurting, was it? The doctor showed me a perfect appendix. They took it out anyway. But, you know.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Yeah.
This is insane, Veer.
I like your commitment, though.
I like your commitment to the bit. I love your commitment to the bit.
And you think cancel culture is going to get me?
Right.
They stole my appendix.
I lost an organ.
Yeah.
Why do you think they took out? I just like a follow up question. Why do you think they took out your appendix even though they knew it was healthy?
Let's begin every conversation with it was 1994. You know, so firstly, there's that. And secondly, I think they would have been like malpractice or something like that. I think they did it also just to save this kid, you know, in terms of. You don't want to open somebody up and like fucking not do anything.
Yeah,
right.
We're already in there.
Yeah.
We rooted around for a few hours. We figured out your appendicitis is not there. However, your liver is all full of shit. So we took that bad boy out. You go from, how did you end up in Galesburg, Illinois?
Yeah,
that's like what, like sure. 70 miles outside of Chicago or something like that? I grew up in Chicago, so.
Yeah, I had, you know, we did not have the kind of money that would afford me going to college in the States and spending, you know, 30 grand or whatever it was a year then. And I think we had about $4,000 or $5,000. And, you know, I was applying to NYU and to Brown and all of that stuff. And actually got into a bunch of those places, but just got letters from them saying, we can't afford to give you this much aid. We mm-hmm. typically don't. Uh-huh. And then I heard about this college called Knox, which is really small. It's 1,400 kids. Diversity is hugely important to them. It's liberal arts, which is a system that I like. And they gave me 95% aid.
Wow.
You know, so I went to college.
Amazing.
In the States, and I spent $3,500 a year, which is nothing.
That's insane now, especially yeah. too.
That's insane. Yeah. My kid's Spider-Man yeah. backpack costs $3,500. I'm pretty sure.
Trip to Disney yeah. certainly does.
Oh, a trip to Disney. Forget about yeah. it. A trip to Disney is 6 years of college. But when you go to Galesburg, is that kind of when you decide when is the first stand-up that you do, like, officially? Like, on a stage, like,
It's at Galesburg.
My... Okay.
But it's more of a rebellion towards theater. You know, I went to study economics, and I'd always done stage work, like debating and dramatics in school. And I took a beginning acting course on a lark. And I had this theater professor called Ivan Davidson who kind of called me into his office at the end. And he's like, you know, it's one of those, I say this to one kid every 10 years. Right. You're meant to do this, kid. And I'm like, do you say that to 10 kids every year? Because, but he legitimately took me through playwriting and intermediate acting and advanced acting. And I was his TA for a while. And then I think I did something like 14 plays while I was there. And I was just exhausted by the end of it, you know. And it was a very, it was a theater of like Stanislavski influence. Mm-hmm. You're sitting in a circle and
like
crying all day.
And method acting.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, and doing all of that stuff. And so I ended up writing a stand-up show called Brown Men Can't Hump. as my thesis performance, and did that senior year of college for 700 of my friends. So yeah.
Oh, 700 of your friends was your first stand-up gig at
90 minutes for 700 of my friends.
Holy shit. Was the first you did time. 90 minutes of the first time you ever did stand-up?
Yeah, and thought I was the shit, and then
right.
ended up doing open mics in Chicago and getting booed off stage on the South Side many weeks in a row. Oh, and figured out, you need to be able to make not your friends laugh as well. That's how this works.
Right.
Chicago's a tough room, man. It's a tough room. Lovely people. I'm part of the group, you know, I'm part of Chicago. But
dude, those South Side rooms in Chicago on a fucking Tuesday night in the winter.
Forget about it.
Are very unforgiving.
Is that where you had to perform at gunpoint?
This happened while I was, I performed at gunpoint twice, actually.
What?
Once once was a show where the promoter hadn't paid us yet. And I'm not going to say which country because then he'll be called out because he's one of two promoters in this country. And I was like, I'm not going on stage unless you pay me. And he was like, I think you're going on stage.
Oh.
Like, and he paid me, to his credit,
off. Okay, well.
You know. After you shit yourself.
A little,
yourself,
nudge.
Yeah.
A little nudge to get up there.
Yeah, did he
and
pay
then
for
at
new
the
pants?
Club that I did in Chicago, there's a legendary story of how like two nights before I performed there is a guy was kind of walking across the room. And a gun just fell out of his pocket onto the stage while a comedian was, you know, just like, onto the stage. Yeah. And what the club manager told me is like, the scariest thing was everybody just checked to see if it was their gun. You know? It's like, you know how a phone rings and you're like, is it my phone?
Yeah. They're all like, is that my gun?
Right.
Yeah. But that is, as you know, the South Side of Chicago.
So yes, right. I do know the South Side of Chicago. That's where I grew up. And it's there are parts of it where you gun in every pocket is just it's a way of life down there. When you go on these so you do your first gig for 700 people, 90 minutes, which is crazy. If Chrissy and I get one good laugh out of an hour of material, I call it a good day at the office. Yeah. You're doing 90 minutes in front of 700 of your closest friends. When you go to Chicago, when you get into Chicago and you go to the South Side and you bomb it, do you sense like, holy shit, this is really tough? Or does this give you like determination,
ammunition,
fire? Are you, I feel like, go ahead.
Happiest when I'm at the bottom of a ladder.
Us too.
Just utterly happiest and most excited. Like I love sucking at something and then knowing that I have nowhere to get but better, right?
Right.
So I think I was booed off stage many, many, many weeks in a row, and I was just kind of relentless. But also because I had tasted a laugh, and that's the thing with this mm-hmm. profession is, you know, anybody who ever wants to get into it, I pray they don't taste a good laugh for long enough that they get out of it.
Yeah.
You know, because if you taste that one good laugh, it's like fucking heroin and it never
you want
you're an
more
addict.
Of it. Yeah.
Yeah, for the rest of your life. And it will mess up your entire life. you know, it's a drug.
I have friends who say this about golf, right? It's like that one good shot makes you think every round makes you think you're Tiger Woods, and you spend hundreds of thousands of dollars over the course of a lifetime chasing that one good shot. If I can just repeat it a couple times on the course, I'll make millions doing that. I sense a kinship about this outsider feeling that you have, because I think Chrissy and I do this show also with a chip on our shoulder. For a lot of different reasons, but that really resonates with me in some mm-hmm. sense about being an outsider and doing it because there's a fire in your belly to get that next laugh, to do that next thing, to be better than I was yesterday, to get to make more friends, to have more people enjoy my comedy. Do you, as when you're in India, you are huge. You're like, what, the second highest grossing comic in India? Is that correct? Something along those lines?
This is going to sound very arrogant, but it's not. It's more humble than you think. We stopped counting a while ago because it became daunting and it wasn't important.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. It's a vanity metric. But I'd say this to illustrate that then you come over here to the United States, where you got your stand-up start, right, essentially at Knox College mm-hmm. in front of these people and then bombing over in Chicago. Does that give you more fire in your belly? Are you like, now I'm going to conquer America, or now I'm going to come make new friends, have more laughs? I want to repeat the success.
I like the anonymity that America gives me because it gives me a chance to work out material in a meritocracy in that sense. You know, so like last night, two nights ago at the Comedy Cellar, I followed Kevin Hart, you know, who had come in to pop in and do a surprise set, right? And he murdered. He just slayed. And everybody in the room just saw Kevin Hart for $12. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They saw him do 20 minutes. Like, and this is on their trip to New York. So they've had the best night of their life. And then a fucking random Indian show.
They're like, you know? Great. Thanks, Kevin.
You know, and I like that. I love that they don't know who you are. And it's a test of how good your material really is. So I like that. In terms of conquering America, look, I do think, you know, hopefully there'll be an American TV show soon and I'll be in a couple of more American movies. But I don't think that whole, the Beatles needed to come to America or like Robbie Williams needed to come to America. I say this with all due respect. The world is a much smaller place now.
Yeah.
You know, Squid Games can conquer America without ever coming to America. You know, so I don't think that whole thing exists anymore.
I agree with you. You know, I think that kind of, you know, moving from place to place and planting your flag and then becoming the next big thing there. The world is so small. You can, if you choose to, you can find things well outside your geographical radius and different flavors and different people and different cultures and different, you know, skin colors. All that stuff is really accessible in 2023. You don't necessarily need to be here to do that. You could also have some success.
I'm here quite a bit, but
I love it.
You know, the thing is, I don't want to waste the unique childhood or upbringing that I've had.
Of course.
You know, so if you grow up in 17 different places in the world, you get to be a global comedy voice. Mm-hmm. And not a lot of American comics get to say that. And not a lot of Indian comics get to say that. So it feels like you're half-assing the meal, you know, to just do it in one place.
I think this leads to my next question, which is you are on this like crazy world tour. What is it? A country on all continents except Antarctica? By the way, why not Antarctica? What's up with those people?
I don't know how to perform in Antarctica. I just barely made it to South America. I'm setting up like a Brazil and a Sao Paulo show. So Rio and a Sao Paulo show. So.
Don't sleep on Antarctica. There are at least 50 to 60 mentally unwell people down there.
Right? There you go. Yeah.
Do you enjoy this part of it? I know you're married. Do you enjoy this part of it, like the constant traveling, being of place to place? That's what you did
do
as a child.
Do they join you too?
Yeah, do they know?
Yeah, Shivani, my wife, will come out to the good places.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
She picks the list. You know, there are days and there are days, you know, mm-hmm. and it depends on what else is going on. Like right now, you know, I'm directing a movie in February that I'm going to star in.
Nice.
Right? And this is back home. So it is a weird thing to be in Albany, New York tomorrow, but be storyboarding for a big Bollywood production.
Interesting. Yeah.
You know, so your brain really has to work, you know. If you're just touring, then that's a different thing. But touch wood, God's been kind over the last 2 years, and I'm working in about 6 or 7 different areas. So in that sense, there are days when it takes a little more management than I would like.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of brain power. We're way too lazy for that show. I just worry about the 12 to 18 children I have and what I'm going to talk about next on the commercial break. And I feel like that's a stress. Is there some sense of culture shock when you're moving from here to there? I know the grocery stores are different. I've done a bit of traveling myself, and the grocery stores are different.
Definitely different.
I can't find.
I try and find like micro consistency as much as I can, you know, so like I have one Bluetooth speaker that plays the exact same soundtrack in every room that I'm in 33 countries, you know, I have only 5 t-shirts and 2 pairs of pants, and I travel the world largely without checking luggage.
Yeah.
And it's those little things that keep you sane.
True.
Do you know what
that.
I mean? Just some consistency. So I try and do that. And, you know, you'll get around. So if you're in Texas, you'll have some barbecue. And if you're in London, you'll go to the pub and have a pint. But you're in there for 24 hours to 48 hours.
Yeah.
Right.
You know? So how much are you really going to do?
Not much.
Right. And what is on your playlist?
Yeah. What is on your playlist?
Oh, so I have I have something called Sleep Sounds, which is what gets me to sleep.
Yeah.
Right. It's an Apple Music playlist. Mm-hmm. So I'll do that. And then I'm a big audiobook guy.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So I'm always listening to audiobooks. So right now I'm listening to Tom Hanks's new book, which is The Making of Another Motion Picture Masterpiece.
Oh.
It's a book about making movies and how hard it is because I'm about to make a movie. So
right.
Getting prepped.
Yeah.
Well. Shameless plug. Get the commercial break on there. That'll put you. I want you to hear this story. So we have these analytics on the back of the podcast, and on our website we have these analytics. We can tell where people are listening from and how they found us. And Google searches is one of them. So early on in the podcast, the top term people were finding our podcast was best podcast to go to sleep.
Yeah,
to.
You're like, great.
For the over 80 nice. Crowd. We're
but then
great
there was also the have best to have
podcast to have sex to. That's right.
Nice. I plan on doing both in about 5 minutes.
So there you go.
There you go. Hey, listen, I'm going to send you a flat pillow for all of your travels. You should take one of those with you. I want to hit on very, very briefly, because this is something that also resonates with me, is that you take religion on the nose. You really, said I lost 80% of my religion the moment I found God, and I wanted to reach into the screen and give you a hug. I thought that was such a fucking incredible line, and it described the way that I felt when I lost my religion, but I found spirituality. I went to Catholic school all my life, but I'd never really bought into it all that much.
Yeah.
And you said that, and I just love that you're not afraid to take that on the nose and share that the dogma, the written words, there's hypocrisy there. It'd be twisted in any which way you want to. It's been told a million times over and over again. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I think, you know, my limited understanding of it is that kindness, good behavior, treating people well, and spreading joy are a way of showing God respect.
Mm.
And religion is a way of showing your family respect. You know, I think that's the way that I look at it. So, you know, in my house, there will be a Diwali prayer, and there'll be we'll celebrate every festival, etc. And I do that to show my parents respect, you know. So I will follow ritual to keep a sense of community and family, etc. But the way I show God respect has nothing to do with religion whatsoever. It is entirely in the way I treat other human beings.
It's such a powerful message, and so true. And we take religion on a lot here. I mean, you know, not the people who are going to church every Sunday because that makes them feel like they're
We get the shysters.
Yeah.
We try to take down the scammers.
Who twist religion to their own, you know, powerful misdeeds, and they cover it up with more scripture and more scripture and more scripture. And at the end of the day, what you're left with is a very broken human talking to other broken humans who are just trying to find some peace and some solace in kind of a nutty world, is which it's always been. And I love when you talk about that stuff. I think you are your sharpest, in my opinion, when you're taking that on the nose. I just think it's fantastic.
Thank you, man.
You're welcome. Thank you. I mean, I think my perspective is, and I think Chrissy and I were talking about this, you wrap all of this with a real sense of love. Your specials, your comedy, when you get up there and you do a couple minutes or an hour, you really, there's a sense that you're trying to show people who you are, and you're trying to embrace them, and you're trying to bring them in and share with your perspective, and with the hopes that they take something away from that. But it's done from a place of love. It's done from a place of open arms, not from a snidey, you know, inside joke, you know, shitty little musings here and there where you punch people in the gut and hope that they don't hurt too hard. I don't think I
get to come from those places. You know, you have to understand that if you are an outsider, or if you are 5'8½" in an industry where, where everybody's 6'2" and fucking gorgeous, you know, or if you have an Indian accent in an industry in Hollywood where everybody has strong American accents, you're not coming from a place of ego into any of these atmospheres at all. So if you're not coming from a place of ego, which is where a lot of comedians can come from, and it's a perfectly fine place to come from, where else do you come from? I come from a place of 600%. That when you come for my show, it will be clear to you that this man left 600% on stage for you, and will send you home flying on a cloud. That's the promise of my show.
Yeah.
So you know how people say, don't try too hard, or don't look like you try too hard.
Yeah.
I try hard. You know, I try too hard. And that's the promise of my show.
Listen, my friend, you got to get on the field or shove something up your ass. Am I right?
Yeah, there you go.
Speaking of 5'8" and a half, there is a brewing controversy that basically only Chrissy and I know about right now, but we're about to let it out in the open. You said you're 5'8½", but did you know that IMDb claims you're 5'4¼"? Are you or are you not, Veer Das, using Ron DeSantis's cobbler, his shoemaker?
No,
are
you, I'm 5'8½" as measured. Fuck you, IMDb.
Seriously, right?
Yeah.
Who's putting that out?
Our editor caught this little discrepancy, and she was like,
it's weirdly specific.
It's weirdly specific.
Yeah, no.
No, fuck IMDb. They think they put me as in four movies I've never been in, so.
Yeah, but don't we all have a net worth of $150 million online anyway? Like, isn't that a thing? So,
Net worth is a bullshit. Version of what actually somebody is worth. I think Donald Trump's net worth has been around $12 billion for 12 years. We're all finding out it was probably more like $12 million.
Yeah.
Listen, my friend, you're a comic. You're an observer of human beings. You're an orator. You're a musician. You play a beautiful song at the beginning of one of your Netflix specials. You're touring all around the country. I'd like to add to that list, friend of the commercial break. I really appreciate you coming
it's
on.
Been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me, guys. I cannot wait for you to see the show in
Atlanta.
We will be there in February. And best to you, Veer. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
All right, guys. Adios. Okay. I'm going to take off. Thanks so much.
Okay.
All right, this was fun.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Cheers, guys.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, podcast besties. Time for one more quick break, and then it's back to the drama. Check out tcbpodcast.com for all of our episodes and youtube.com/thecommercialbreak for fully edited video episodes. Find us on Instagram @thecommercialbreak and on TikTok @tcbpodcast. And of course, if you want to get in touch with us, which, like, of course you do, leave us a voicemail at 626-ASK-TCB3 or text us at 855-TCB-8383. Now, let's listen to some sponsors and get this show going.
This episode is sponsored in part by our good friends at Uncommon Goods. All right, Christmas is coming up. We're all doing the mad dash to figure out what everybody wants, go to the stores, buy online, all that other stuff. But me personally, and my brothers can tell you this, I like to be very unique about my gift giving. So unique that no one has any clue what I'm thinking when I get them a present. In other words, I get gag gifts every year for my brothers and some of my immediate family, and I always love to see their faces when they open up the gift. Disappointed they didn't get anything real, but they get a good chuckle nonetheless. I am so pleased that Uncommon Goods is now making it much easier for me to find these particular items. And it's not just about fun and gag gifts. They have everything. Home items, decor, corporate gifts, jewelry. If you need it, they have it. This is a truly unique shopping experience. Everything you see is made by small artists and independent businesses. These items are often very unique and handmade. I was on the website this morning looking for my gag gifts, and they have a whole section of fun and quirky gifts. Two things stood out to me. Number one, they actually have a phone jail. It's like a cage, like a small cage with a phone holder in it for like three or four phones. And then there's a lock. And if you have the key, no one's getting their phones. I hope my wife never finds that particular gift. How about this one? An actual game, a board game called Ganja Land. That's going to be fun for all the kids. I really like this company. And they like you to get 15% off your next gift. Go to uncommongoods.com/TCB. That's uncommongoods.com/TCB for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We are all out of the ordinary. And that's something every TCB listener can agree upon. Again, go to uncommongoods.com/TCB for 15% off your first gift. Go to this website. You'll have a ton of fun. And thank you to Uncommon Goods for being a sponsor of The Commercial Break. All right, and we're back from break. What a wonderful conversation with Veer.
I absolutely love him. I can't wait to see him live.
Honestly, we should have taken him before Conan. I don't know what we were thinking. No, I'm kidding. Of course, he didn't come to us before Conan, because that's just not the way it works in the podcast universe. Of all the shows you go to first, commercial break. Veer's like, well, I've done the rest. Now I guess I'll do the last.
It's not for everyone.
It's not for everyone. That's for sure. Let me remind everybody again, you can go to Veer Das. That's VIRDAS.IN for all the information about his tour. He's currently on a very long and everywhere world tour, and he's coming to the United States. So get your tickets. I know Chrissy and I are going to be at the Atlanta show. So if you're going to be at the Atlanta show, let us know. We'll say hello. So
just we tried to convince him to go to Antarctica, but
yeah, because I like I said in the interview, I mean, there's at least 50 to 60 very unwell people in Antarctica. Why does Antarctica
work?
Yeah, why do they always get shit on?
Yeah,
we need to, you know what we should do?
It definitely takes a special kind of person to go do that.
I bet if we opened up a comedy club there, that we could do a 1 hour special, we would kill it.
And maybe die.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, you take the good, you take the bad.
I don't know if my North Face will cut it.
Well, if the podcast and its stupid shenanigans don't kill you first, then we'll make it down to Antarctica. But Veer was a great guest. Veer was a great guest, and we really appreciate having him on. So go to his website, get tickets to his tour, and please go watch Landing on Netflix. That's so important, because that is the metric upon which a lot of people, you know, eat and drink and sleep and use
eat and drink and use
pillows. buy themselves nice flat pillows. Yes. I feel like I want to send him a pillow.
I know.
But then I thought about it for a minute, and we were talking about it on the break, and then I thought to myself, well, that's just one more thing he's got to carry in his his non-check-in luggage.
But the flat pillow could really squish up nice.
What if I buy him like a super flat pillow? Yeah. Like the kind you find in a hospital bed.
Yes,
you know what I'm saying? Or a jail.
Like, or maybe we make a pillowcase that says The Commercial Break.
Oh, that's true. We could do that.
Something
and then
like that.
We just put like a piece of cardboard in
or
there.
Or have the 21 EPM just as a reminder.
Sure, Veer would put that right on his pillowcase. Such a great guest. And, wow. Okay, well, there you go.
We dipped our toe.
We dipped our toe in the interview water. More coming up next week.
Yeah.
Stay
tuned. We're planning on more.
Yeah, I think we're clipping at maybe one a week right now. So that's a part of the show.
Or now that one a year.
Or just one a year, depending on whether or not the agent calls us back. I'm already getting angry text messages from Veer's agent. No, I'm kidding. She's lovely. Thanks, Pam, to setting this all up. Thanks to Astrid and Christina for helping us do our intrepid researchers. For Veer Das, thank you to you. And thanks, of course, to
Veer. Thank you to you.
So, yeah, stay tuned. Now that we have 4 episodes a week, we got to find some content to fill it. Why not let somebody else talk for a minute? That's what I figured. All right, our information, tcbpodcast.com. That's where you go. You find out more information about Chrissy and I. You can read all the show notes with all the pertinent information about all of our guests. Please go there, click on the links, buy the tickets, do the Netflix thing. You know all the drills. And you can get your free piggy fronting sticker. Hit the contact us button. The drop-down menu says, I want my free sticker. Give us your address. Tell us if you want us to sign it or say something funny. We'll do that and we'll put it in the mail. It'll be back to you in, I don't know, 7 to 10 days. Don't bother Astrid. Leave her alone, poor girl. 626, ask TCB the number 3. That's 1-626. Ask TCB the number 3. Anywhere in the world. Toll free. Questions, comments, concerns, content, ideas, comments about the guests you want to throw our way. Please let us know. We would love to hear from you. Also, you can leave us a voicemail and you may be on the commercial break. I think that's why so few people are calling. We get a lot of text messages, but no one calls. And the couple of people who do call, it's not usable audio.
Yeah.
So I think they're just trying to fuck with us. Anyway.
Prank us.
Yeah. You can call us and leave a voicemail. Be mindful your voice may be used on the commercial break. So don't
Although
say
we've
anything.
Never done it before.
Yeah, well, we haven't done it because none of the audio is usable. It's all people trying to prank us. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They think they're hilarious. And maybe they are. I just don't find it funny. Add the commercial break on Instagram. TCB Podcast on TikTok and YouTube.com/the commercial break. We're going to put clips and audio and all the good stuff from all of our interviews up on YouTube. So please subscribe, like, and comment on your favorite video. And once again, Veer Das, thanks so much. Okay, Chrissy, I think that's all we can do today.
I think so,
but I'll tell you that I love you.
I love you.
Best to you.
Best to you.
Best to you out there in the podcast universe. Until next time, Chrissy and I always say, we do say, and we must say,
goodbye.
Oh, and get on the field, shove it up your ass. Bye.
Cow killing bastard.